Okay, my name is Molly Marin. I'm the webinar coordinator with the Technical Assistance Center, and I want to welcome everyone today. I'm going to post the link to our webpage in the chat. The Dr. Stahl, who is doing the presentation today, is allowed us to post the PowerPoint slides. I know several people have requested those, so I want to make sure that those are available, and you can go out and grab those if you need them during the presentation. There you go. A couple other reminders before we get started. Next week, we start Strand 4, which is our pre-K series. There's 5 webinars in that series. Registration information is available on our webpage as well. And I want to make sure everybody knows that that is a 3:30 start. So that is different than the 4 o'clock start we've been doing. It's a 3:30 start. It's still an hour and 15, but it starts at 3:30. The presenters for the next strand have also agreed to allow the slides to be available in advance. So we'll continue posting 1 hour before the webinar. I want to remind everyone to use the chat to ask questions or comments during the presentation. Dr. Stahl will do her best to meld responses into the presentation as she can. On her screen, she doesn't have a real good view of the chat, so if you need to repeat those, and she'll probably tell you that, feel free to type it in again if your question doesn't get answered. There will be time at the end for questions, so you can always put that in at the end, too. At the very end, I will post an evaluation link, and it's very short. We do appreciate if you take a few minutes to complete that. We look at those every week and use those as we plan going forward. So that brings us to today's topic, which is our last in our Strand 3 series. And we've been so fortunate to have Dr. Catherine Doherty Stahl with us for the last several weeks. And today's topic is tiered interventions and CCLF. And a little bit about Dr. Stahl. She is a clinical associate professor of education in New York University. She has over 25 years of classroom experience. Her research interests include reading acquisition and reading comprehension. I see somebody's getting an echo, too. I'll answer that in a second. So Dr. Stahl has authored and co-authored a number of books on reading assessment and reading instruction. And before I turn it over to her, I just want to say if you're getting an echo, you're probably on twice, and you need to get out of one of the windows. So check to be sure that you, the person, Francis, I do see you are on twice. So if you close one of your windows, you will not hear the echo anymore. You only want to be logged in once. Hopefully that helps. And so at this point, I would like to turn it over to Dr. Stahl. Welcome.
Thank you, Molly, and welcome to all of you for the our final webinar on using RTI as a framework for your working with your Common Core. And I'd like to welcome all the return visitors and also any of our new visitors today. So, our focus today is tiered interventions and the Common Core. As you know, the last 3 weeks, we've really focused on tier one and looking at how we might implement some good research-validated instruction in tier one to help lower the numbers of children who are likely to need tier two and tier three interventions. But today we will be talking about tier two and tier three and what the instructional focus will look like. We'll talk a little bit about how to determine groups for tier two and tier three. And also we will address assessments to be used in tier three and diagnostically in tier three. And I do recommend that you go back to the John Hintz series, which is webinar series 2 that John Hintz did. He provided some wonderful detailed explanations regarding assessments of all kinds for your RTI model. And then I did the fourth session in that series, which addressed diagnostic assessments. As I have stated in the past 3 webinars, my expertise is primarily in the elementary ages. So this will be focusing on RTI and tiered interventions in the elementary class, in the elementary school. And the intended audience is for school personnel who are directly responsible for implementing instruction and supporting core instruction and supplementary intervention within an RTI model. And certainly, I think that even classroom teachers will find the information, and school principals will, elementary school principals will find the information that we're presenting today, will find it to be very useful. If you would fill out the poll that Molly is posting now to tell me a little bit about who you are, so that I can better meet your needs. And while you are doing that, I will reiterate that despite the fact that I have been working with the RTI Technical Assistance Center for the last 4 or 5 years, that and also the serving as a member of the Common Core ELA Advisory Panel, all the information that I will be presenting today is not in any way associated with either of those two organizations. Okay, great to see that our participants are primarily from the elementary school, since this will be primarily addressing the elementary school RTI model. Thank you, Molly. Okay, so as we look at the parameters of a research-based tiered model, primarily in tier one is general education, and ideally the tier one instruction should be able to meet the needs of 80% of the student population and enable 80% of that population to come fairly close to meeting the Common Core standards or whatever kinds of learning standards that we are establishing. Tier two and tier three will be needed to meet the needs of the approximately 20% of our school population. And there are few resources in tier two and tier three. So that's why we really want to be cautious about spreading those resources for tier two and tier three too thin. It really is logistically impossible to place 60 to 70% of a population of children into a setting which is designed to meet the needs of 20% of your population. And by stretching your tier two and tier three to be serving greater than 20% of your school population, you are going to be diminishing the power of those intense small group tiered interventions. And, we have taken a look at this diagram on the past 3 weeks. And so, therefore, that is why we did, over the first 3 weeks, spend the majority of time talking about tier one, so that it is important for us to find ways for tier one instruction to meet the needs of that 80%, and that way we can continue providing small, individually or small group, homogeneous instruction in the upper tiers, tier two and tier three, so that it can be effective. Now, certainly, your school ecology will determine your tier two and your tier three, because it's going to depend on the staff that you have and their expertise. It will also depend on your budget and the number of support staff that you have that you can afford to be working with very small homogeneous groups, and what kind of training that faculty do have. Also, it will depend on your, and this in turn will inform your decision tree, which is a flow chart that will identify if children perform in these ways, then they are to stay in tier one. If they perform in these kinds of ways, then we have something to provide for them in a tier two setting or a tier three setting. And your decision tree is what establishes the criteria for your tiered interventions. And it certainly also depends on your school demographic and the kinds of services that are needed. I do want to take a minute to define a couple of approaches that are commonly used within Tier 2 and Tier 3. You will frequently hear a protocol being described as a standard protocol. Vaughn and Denton describe or define a standard protocol as a specialized, scientifically based reading program or curricula designed to meet specific student needs. Okay, a standard protocol is a, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a scripted program, but it is something that is a protocol that is used in a standard way for whatever group of children that teacher is meeting with. And it has a particular scope and sequence of instruction that needs to be followed. And it has particular lesson components that would always need to be included. And so it's basically standardized. Then another approach is called the problem-solving approach. The problem-solving approach is one in which a school team evaluates students' performance data to identify and define learning problems to develop interventions to solve those problems. And so and then to evaluate the effects. So a problem-solving approach is much more individualized. Teachers who are teaching in, say, a Tier 2 or Tier 3 setting that uses a problem-solving approach would require a great deal of expertise in both diagnostic practices, and also they would need to have a large toolkit of research-validated or research-based interventions that they would then apply depending on what those the children's needs are. And so this requires a very high level of expertise of those Tier 2 and Tier 3 providers. And also it also requires, because now the intervention is not standardized, now the providers must be very rigorous in providing the other stakeholders, the parents, the parents, the classroom teachers, and the school administrators with progress monitoring data to really provide the evidence that the decisions that those faculty members made about interventions and procedures to support the children and to target their needs are indeed being effective. So some of the resources that schools need to evaluate in the implementation of Tier 2 and Tier 3 is one of the largest challenges is where will we find the time and the human resources for Tier 2 and Tier 3? And we must remember that this must be beyond the 90 to 120 minute literacy block that is offered to children in the classroom. So children may not leave for Tier 2 during shared reading. Children should not be leaving during the read aloud where comprehension instruction, for example, in first and second grade, that read aloud is so important and is really the foundation of your core knowledge curriculum and is also the foundation for any comprehension instruction that's happening. So children may not leave the classroom for Tier 2 and Tier 3 during the Tier 1 literacy block. If we want it to be effective, it must supplement, it must go beyond, it must be more than what all of the children are getting. Also, I think you need to evaluate, do you have resources for a problem-solving approach in Tier 2 and Tier 3? One of the things that I found very interesting during one of John Hintz's presentations, he was talking about some research that he was a part of that found that when they looked at schools that did implement a problem-solving approach for Tier 2, they found found that often the protocols were very similar, and so that they had to really evaluate whether, especially in tier two, whether it was worth the investment in doing of time and expertise in doing the problem solving if in fact the actual interventions for each small group looked very similar, looked the same. Because the strength of the problem solving model is that it is very diagnostic and targeted to a group, a homogeneous group of children's needs, or in a one-on-one setting. And then the next question we need to ask, or your school team would need to ask, is how will you meet student needs within each of these reading domains? Word recognition, fluency, language comprehension, and writing. What are the kinds of interventions that you are providing that will address those literacy needs? Now, regardless of ecology, here are some of the guidelines that you do need to keep in mind. In Tier 2 and Tier 3, it is very important to select a target and keep your eye on that target, teach to it, assess to it, so that you can see progress in that area. You need to progress monitor frequently using standardized assessment that is sensitive to growth within a fairly short period of time. You also need to use research-validated practices. And, you know, I think in the Common Core era, in many ways, we have forgotten about using research-based practice and research-validated practice and some of the important instructional techniques that have a research base, and really focusing on and ensuring that what we are doing with children does have a strong, robust research base. It's also important to keep groups small and homogeneous. I have seen one of the responses I've seen to some of the 2013 ELA test score outcomes is I've seen resources stretched beyond where they're going to be effective. In order for any growth to be made, those groups must be small and they must be have common needs. If you're working with fourth graders and you have children in that same, you have 10 kids in a group and some of them are, you know, have needs in word recognition, other children have mastered the foundational word recognition skills, then that group, the individuals in that group are unlikely to make much progress because the intervention has to be so diluted and has to be so broad. The other thing that must be kept in mind is the groups need to meet 3 to 5 times a week from 30 to 60 minutes in order for them to be effective. So for example, if you're only meeting with children twice a week, it is unlikely that they are going to really reap the benefits of the intervention. So if you're investing the time in having interventions, make sure that the groups are small, that they're homogeneous, and that they're meeting often enough for the group to make a difference. I would consider, and I'm seeing a question about group size. I would say that ideally a group size for tier two should be 4 to 6. I know that in this Common Core era and some of the efforts to stretch our program, those group sizes may be stretched to as large as 6 to 8. However, you must recognize if you stretch the group, you're going to be minimizing the outcome. Ideally, they should be 4 to 6. In tier three, they should be individualized or at the most 3 children with very homogeneous needs. And you're going to continue to use data to adjust intensity. And the ways we adjust the group size are time, moving from a 30-minute block to a 45-minute block, adjusting group size, moving from a group size of 6 to 8 to putting that child in a tier 3 group, perhaps with just 3 children. The frequency, instead of meeting 3 times a week, meeting 5 times a week, and content refinement. Perhaps you're finding that what you're teaching is too broad. How can you narrow it to make it more explicit and to make that target smaller so that you're more likely to hit the child's instructional academic target? For more information about the assessment process and how to build a decision tree and defining the roles that each tier has, please refer back to webinar number 3. Our webinar last week addressed how schools might want to refine what assessments they're administering, how to make sure that all teachers who need to be trained in particular assessments receive that training, and then how to divide up who is going to do what, how are we going to communicate the data to each other, and also how to identify what program, what intervention are we using in Tier 2, what intervention are we using at Tier 3 in Grades 3, 4, and 5, or are we needing in grades K1 and 2? These things can't just be left to chance. They need to be defined by the school RTI design team or the school literacy team, and they need to be in black and white on paper. The teachers must be committed to these guidelines. As we continue in our presentation, these are the two books that I will be referencing. So if you hear me reference particular assessments as such, all of those assessments, including reproducible forms of those assessments, are found in the first book, Assessment for Reading Instruction. If I'm talking about a framework and a diagnostic pathway, and how do you figure out what children need diagnostically and how to determine which children need to be in which tier, that information is all found, the process information is all found in the second book, Reading Assessment in an RTI Framework. And both of these books were co-authored with my wonderful colleague and mentor, Michael McKenna. All of the information that I will be sharing with you today is based on the cognitive model that was developed by my beloved late husband, Stephen Stahl. He developed this model, which looks at comprehension as the center of all reading instruction. And unlike, this is a little more complex than the simple model or the simple view, which is the foundation for the Common Core and your any of you who are using the reading program Core Knowledge, rather than taking a simple view with just 2 pathways, we advocate 3 pathways. And the 3 pathways that we believe feed into reading comprehension are automatic word recognition, language comprehension, and the third pathway that we add that is not part of the simple view that is incorporated in Core Knowledge is the strategic knowledge. And so we believe that these 3 pathways are the pathways that we need to, when children are having reading comprehension problems or any kind of reading problem, we investigate these 3 pathways. The first book, the reading assessment book, actually is organized according to these pathways and has assessments included for each of these boxes that contribute to success in each of the pathways. So first of all tiers, decoding instruction must be differentiated. If I recommend that you determine where children are, and this can be done in tier one, and I recommend that it be done in tier one by a very simple spelling test, the Bear, Invernizzi, Johnston, and Templeton Words Their Way test. Is a very quick spelling test that will give you, it's a treasure trove of information. It's a quick class-wide spelling test. It's organized by features that will enable you as a classroom teacher or you as a tier two diagnostician to identify where should phonics instruction or any kind of word study be, what does it need to incorporate? What is the content of that of that instruction? And this will have, it tells you exactly what features children have mastered, which features children need to review, and which features must be receiving explicit systematic instruction. If you are working with a tier two group that has children that are in different developmental levels and are needing different types of, or not different types of instruction, but are needed to be instructed. If you have a child that is has mastered the long vowels and is now ready to learn diphthongs and R controlled vowels, but in that same group you have children that still have not mastered short vowels, you are going to have a very hard time meeting those needs and hitting that bullseye that you see portrayed on this slide. Phonics instruction is simply hitting a bullseye. And in order to hit the bullseye, you need to be targeting instruction to where the child is. Think dart, not pin the tail on the donkey. This is a very important element to ensuring that 10 minutes of phonics instruction can really be powerful if you're targeting the instruction to where the child is. If the child is at a different developmental stage and you are teaching long vowels and they still haven't mastered short vowels, both of you will feel as though you're beating your head against the wall and being unsuccessful. These foundational skills that you see in the top pathway are the priority for the tier two teacher in kindergarten, first, and second grade. That would include things like their word recognition skills, including phonics, including high frequency words. The classroom teacher in tier one should be responsible for all themed instruction. The read aloud, the shared reading, along the interdisciplinary units of instruction that are currently being recommended by the Common Core. Additionally, I believe that teachers in kindergarten and first grade are the teachers who are responsible for moving children forward in levels of increasingly difficult text during that small instructional level reading time. Because they should be meeting as classroom gatekeeper in kindergarten and first grade and early in second grade, those teachers should be meeting each day with their guided reading groups and monitoring through running records where the what the text level that children are capable of reading with 90 to 95% accuracy. The components of tier two in grades kindergarten through second grade are should be it should include intense targeted instruction in the foundations within homogeneous groups. It should contain intense practice, intense, explicit, and systematic of instruction of phonics and also high frequency words. I would also include, I can see a little something about the special ed teacher, and I'm not, again, I can't really see all of the chat, but in a 20-minute intervention for kindergarten and a 30-minute intervention for first grade, and in a special ed setting for kindergarten and first grade, these two areas should definitely be the target, and 20 minutes is plenty of time to cover them. 20 minutes is not time enough to do a guided reading lesson. for those children. That is why it is the responsibility, in my opinion, of the first grade or kindergarten teacher. This is also a place where you might do some reading of decodable text. Decodable text. It's another way to provide for these children who haven't been able to catch on with explicit instruction in their classroom. This is another place where you might provide the decodable book that has an intense collection of words that have a particular pattern that they are studying. Assessment of these skills is very easy because these are constrained skills. So, for example, if you use a CBM screener, you would be doing your nonsense words, you would be using your oral reading fluency at this point in first grade and also in second grade. I would also add to that, I would also use a CBM screener in first grade for high frequency words. These are available on Intervention Central. It's a website that enables you to make a high frequency word CBM. The Fuchs have found that in first grade, that is one of the most important CBMs or one of the important, most important ways that you can progress monitor. And I would have to say that through my experience in my in this NYU reading clinic, that I would have to agree with Fuchs on that. And then in kindergarten through second grade, the progress monitoring must also include text level reading. And I believe that the classroom teacher should probably be the one responsible for that. Perhaps she may only be able to have time to do progress monitoring for children who are functioning on level and above once a month. But for any children who are functioning below level, those text level running records are crucial, and they must be done at a minimum every 2 weeks. Here is what a high-frequency word progress monitoring chart would look like. The goal would be, since you're wanting children to read those high-frequency words every minute, to recognize the words per second, one word per second, then the goal would be 60 words in a minute. I recommend in Tier 2 in the primary grades that you consider a standard protocol because most schools simply do not have the resources to provide problem-solving support at Tier 2. And that way you can have teachers who may not be reading specialists or may not be special ed teachers with explicit diagnostic training in reading to still meet the needs, because primarily they're going to be the needs of foundational, those foundational skills, which are, as my husband always liked to say, that's not the rocket science related to reading. Also include ELs in this instruction. Research indicates that their progress in foundational skills is comparable to English-only speakers. Please do not wait to put them in those Tier 2 groups. Please do not wait to put English learners in their Tier 2 reading groups if their need is the foundational skills. Now, if we jump down to the language pathway on our cognitive model, I know that we have research evidence that comprehension problems can show up as early as children who are age 4, children who are age 5, in their ability to generate inferences, and in their ability to retell stories or to pretend read a storybook. We have that evidence. However, the reality is most schools simply don't have the staff or the expertise to have an adequate program in the comprehension pathways in first and second grade other than speech and language. Folks, please make best friends with your speech and language therapist. They have so much knowledge and so many resources that can be helpful for those children who, in Tier 1, you have already explicitly taught them how to do a retelling. They're still having some trouble with comprehension, retelling, asking and answering questions. Please rely on your speech and language therapist for some support. In our elementary schools, Tier 3, in Tier 3, I do believe these are children for whom the standard protocol and what works with most children has not worked. These are the children who truly need something extra, something special. This also includes special education. This must use a problem-solving model. It needs to be individualized, or a maximum group of size of three children with the exact same diagnostic needs. And the best kind of program for children in kindergarten, first, and early second grade in tier three, those children who are really struggling, would be reading recovery, which is the gold standard of all intervention, the gold standard of all professional development, or your second choice would be a fake reading recovery, such as the interactive strategies approach by Donna Scanlon or Reading Rescue. These children need a more comprehensive approach. You do need 30 minutes for this. You do need 30 minutes for a comprehensive approach that includes the orchestration of those foundational skills, the phonics, the word recognition, and reading connected text. There needs to be fine-grained differentiation at this level for these children, and there needs to be daily progress monitoring. A running record must be taken each day. This requires a master teacher. This is what a progress monitoring chart of book level would look like. What I like to do, this is an example from our reading clinic. I also now actually do like to put in each little box, I like to put the percent that the child read, the percent of accuracy, and I like to put the book title above. You can simply make a very simple chart that looks like this, or it's found in our ARCH reading assessment in an RTI framework. Book, or you can simply make a little chart like this for progress monitoring in K-2. Now, support from the English second language teacher. I recommend that classroom teachers share with their English, with their students, ESL teacher, what are those interdisciplinary units that you're teaching as part of your themed instruction for your shared reading, your read aloud, or if you're using core knowledge, what is the topic, the science, social studies, literary topic that you're studying? Work collaboratively with your English ESL teacher, with your speech and language teacher, to build bridges to language and comprehension using these same thematic units and content. This is a non-negotiable related to the Common Core. This comprehension at these ages is imperative. Intermediate grades. Okay, now we're moving to grades 3 through 5. Determining groups for Tier 2. Grouping all kids who are not proficient in the same group simply because they're in the same homeroom and didn't get, received a 1 or a 2, this does not work. The other thing that does not work is that ELA test item analysis, or even looking just standard by standard at some kind of, oh, I think that the children don't know this standard or that standard. For the most part, children who are having comprehension problems and probably would have difficulty in all of the items because there is overlap. There is overlap among those items, and we're going to explain why in just a minute. All right. This theory proposed by Scott, or this theory by Scott Paris, which is called constrained skills theory, is something that's important for us to understand when we think about this difference between measuring the constrained skills, which would include phonics being most constrained, phonemic awareness less constrained, and fluency less constrained. When we compare that with vocabulary and comprehension, which are unconstrained, we have some implications for instruction and assessment that are very important. Constrained abilities, such as letter name recognition, phonics, are linear. And with instruction, children develop mastery within a few years. They are easy to assess. You either know the sound of V or you don't know the sound of V. It does not matter whether you are reading a medical journal or Dan the Flying Man. They are easy to assess. On the other hand, unconstrained abilities are multidimensional. They are incremental. It's not all or nothing. I could read a medical journal and I could get the gist of it and understand some of the information from that medical journal, although I would not have a comprehensive understanding, nor would you want me to perform a medical procedure on you. But I can look at that medical journal and get a bit of information from it. Unconstrained abilities are also context dependent. How much support is being provided? What is the purpose for reading this? Am I just reading to find out one little bit of information? Or am I reading to really create a whole research project? Unconstrained abilities develop across a lifetime. We are all still learning vocabulary, and incrementally, even words that we know, with each context that we are exposed to that word, we are learning more ways to use it, and our comfort level with it is increasing. This is important because that's one of the reasons why comprehension is difficult to assess. It's acquired across a lifetime. It's never all or nothing. So context, how much support is provided, our purpose for reading, the genre, and the content. These are context and text factors, okay? Classroom factors, setting factors, and factors related to the text. Then if we think about comprehension, we also have these other reader factors that must be measured and contribute. Decoding, fluency, vocabulary, prior knowledge, metacognition, children's interest, working memory, self-regulation. All of these pulse points contribute to yield a comprehension threshold. They all contribute to comprehension. If a child has a lot of prior knowledge, it's very possible that their decoding cannot be, you know, might not necessarily be, let's say they're reading a, let me put this another way. Let's say that they are reading a, they have been tested and that their instructional reading level is level M. Well, they pick up a level O book that they're interested in, they have a lot of prior knowledge about the topic, and they're interested in it, and they also are familiar with the vocabulary. It's very possible that that child who was identified as an instructional level L would be successful reading a level O book because of the prior knowledge, the vocabulary, the interest, the self-regulation, all raises the comprehension threshold. These factors all need to be considered, and therefore there is not just one single assessment that will measure comprehension. So therefore, what do we do to determine groups for tier two? Oh, let me back up just one second. One of the things that this all contributes to as well is the reason the Common Core wants to have a test that lasts 3 days instead of 1 hour is because they want to provide as many different texts as possible so that children will not be judged based just on one or two texts and may not know anything about the topic. So by the Common Core and the tests that your children, the ELA tests that your children will be taking, is based on this kind of theoretical construct. So, how do we determine groups for the tier two? Well, you must do diagnostic assessments to determine what that each child's weak pulse points are. Just because a child got a one or two doesn't mean they're all the same. Sheila Valencia conducted a study several years ago that found out that with the children who were not passing the state ELA test, that they had as many as 10 different diagnostic profiles. They all don't have the same needs. So we need to identify what those weak pulse points are among the children who did not pass your state ELA. We need to then raise our comprehension threshold by focusing on those weak pulse points. Now, the diagnostics that you will engage in will be in each of these three pathways, and there are assessments that enable you to do that. Okay. But you have in order, once you identify these pulse points in tier two and tier three, then you must put kids in homogeneous groups, not based on the schedule, not based on, oh, well, Miss Jones goes to lunch at 11 o'clock and Miss Smith's class is still in there, so I'm going to take Miss Smith's class at 11 o'clock. That it can't be based on lunchroom schedules. It must be based on forming homogeneous groups so you can hit the target that you have and providing intense practice. So, for example, you will need to use a triangulation of, if you're in fourth and fifth grade, you have your kids' ELA scores from last year. Third graders, you don't have the ELA scores. But in third, fourth, and fifth grade, you must use some kind of oral reading fluency measure. You must use the Words Their Way elementary spelling inventory. You must use some kind of measure of retelling, of a child's retelling, and the questions they are answering that is Lexile correlated to identify both what the children need and who are the neediest children. So you're differentiating, you're looking at where is the area of need and who are the neediest kids for determining who's going to get tier two and tier three. So you have now, I would say you would divide them first. You know, a school is a public school. You're not going to be able to provide an individualized program for every kid. So basically, in third, fourth, and fifth grade, you're going to have to divide the kids in two clusters. And the two clusters are who are the kids who still have word recognition problems, and that's why they couldn't answer the comprehension questions is because they couldn't read the grade level text. So those kids would be in a word recognition cluster. Their intervention must address phonics if they still need phonics, and that's why you need to do that elementary spelling inventory to find out if they still need phonics or if they just have a fluency problem. Is it just this, is it that they know how words work and that they have very good understanding of all of the phonics patterns up through long vowel patterns, up through unusual vowels, and into syllable affix stage? If they have that under control, but their fluency is still below 100 words a minute, then they probably just have a fluency problem. But the intervention is going to have to incorporate the comprehension as well. So which of these three boxes, okay, do they just need fluency and comprehension, or do they need phonics, fluency, and comprehension if they are having a word recognition problem? Your diagnostic tests need to identify this. If the children are fine, if their oral reading fluency is 110 words a minute and they are in the late syllable affix stage or in the derivative stage, then they're having simply a comprehension problem if they still scored, say, a 2 in the proficiency, or if they can't do an adequate retelling. So those are children that simply need to have their intervention address comprehension only. So if you have children who still have those foundational needs, you will spend 15 to 20 minutes of a 45-minute intervention devoting it to the foundational skill pulse points for those students. And then you will additionally support whatever the Tier 1 focus is on comprehension strategies and written response to text. This book, Powerful Writing Strategies for All Students, is a wonderful text that talks about how to help support children who need something extra in writing and creating written responses to text, as many of these children do. So in comprehension, you would want to focus on the comprehension strategies that are supporting the themed text in the Tier 1 setting. You would also perhaps read additional text on the disciplinary theme that might be slightly easier and shorter. You would also support writing strategies needed for the unit, and you might provide some repeated reading of stretch text. So, a word about text. Here are some research studies that are important to address. Torgerson, way back in 1985, that's way before the Common Core, he found that greater overlap among words or redundancy across practice passages increased transfer to new text. So that speaks to one more justification for using themed units as our foundation for literacy instruction. If children are seeing words about fresh water and all the target vocabulary, it's going to make reading and writing much easier for them. It's going to promote fluent reading. Rather than seeing a book today on frogs, a book tomorrow that's a narrative, a book the next day on freshwater, then a book the next day on octopus. So we really want to make sure that we are creating disciplinary units so that there is a great overlap among words. O'Connor also determined that struggling readers in grades 3 through 5 performed equally well on general reading post-tests, regardless of whether the interventionist in Tier 2 or Tier 3 used grade level materials or materials at the kid's instructional level. The thing she did find that seemed to make the difference was that kids needed to have a word per minute. They needed to be able to read 60 words per minute to take advantage of the third grade level text. That's important. Children needed to read 60 words per minute to be able to really take advantage of that grade level text. However, we do know that the goal is, by the end of second grade, 89 words per minute. We're really going for at least 100 words a minute. In struggling readers in grades 3 through 5, this is evidence that fluency is still the strongest contributor to comprehension outcomes at these grades. It's deteriorating. In grades K and 1, I'm sorry, in grades first and second grade, fluency is very strongly correlated with comprehension. But with each progressive grade level, as these other pulse points become more important, fluency decreases in importance. But in grades 3 and 4, it still is very important. We can't just say, well, I use comprehension to determine whether my child is going to be is a good reader or not. The fluency cannot be ignored. So let's take a look at how a targeted intervention would look in grade 3. Okay, so in tier 1, this is a classroom, this is a map of a set of units. It's the first few months of a grade 3 classroom of a school that I worked with up in the Bronx. And so their units in tier 1 were stories worth telling, frogs, freshwater, and explorers and different countries. So they used a mix of the expeditionary units as well as units that they had been using for their New York State social studies and science. And so they took those units and developed a plan for a year. So they had the unit. Then they had this, they identified a comprehension strategy focus. Remember that from the National Reading Panel and from all the robust research on how important it is for children, good readers use particular cognitive comprehension strategies. So they actually matched which strategies are likely to help children overcome meaning-making hurdles with the text that they are reading at this level. And they identified them in black and white on paper. Then they identified the writing focus in black and white on paper on this chart. This was shared with the ESL teachers. It was also shared with the special ed teachers and the tiered interventionists. And because the hope is that the tier 2 and tier 3 teachers are simultaneously working on the exact same comprehension strategies and writing style that is happening in the classroom. We all can agree that story structure is an important comprehension strategy. A kid is not going to be able to do a retelling if they don't know story structure elements and story grammar. They're not going to be able to do a good retelling if they don't know that not the value of a character is not just I can tell that this character's trait is that this character is has a particular character trait, but what the power of that trait is, how does it contribute to the plot episodes and the story's trajectory? And so we want the tier 2 teacher to be teaching that same important cognitive strategy that is supporting the particular text that children are reading in this unit. So we are now working cohesively as a school. We're not working in silos. We're not having the tier 2 teacher teach story structure in November when the classroom teacher is teaching ideational prominence or teaching summarization of informational text. We're working together, folks. Now, what about children who are very far behind, who are in special ed or in tier 3? Again, you must rely, or I rely on the cognitive assessment model. that's in the McKenna Install book. All right. So I've determined whether I'm going along the, you know, I look for where are the pulse points that I need to work on with this child, and I make a very narrow target, because you and I both know that children at this level who are very far behind have lots and lots of needs. And so if we try to meet every single need they have, we will end up meeting no needs. So let's pick our targets. Certainly that automatic word recognition, if it's not in place, requires some attention. But also, we can't just forget about the comprehension. We must be continuing to build that. So let's take a look at what a diagnostic, how would we go about finding out where a child is for Tier 3 and special education. This takes somebody who knows what they're doing, all right? You need to know assessment, and you need to know interventions that are matched with each of these boxes. So, fluency and context. So you know the child is reading 39 words a minute in fourth grade. Well, let's take a look. Where is the process falling apart? Let's look at automatic word recognition. We're going to look at their high-frequency words. We're going to look at the decoding. We're going to look at those two things first. And here are the assessments that the Tier 3 teacher would employ to look at these two contributors to oral reading fluency. Oral reading fluency is simply a thermometer gauge. You need to figure out what's happening in detail in decoding and in detail with high-frequency words and hit the target. If decoding is extremely low, then you might also want to back up one step further and even do some tests of phonological awareness. What about language comprehension? Well, there are tests. Language comprehension incorporates vocabulary and also text and sentence structures. So where are you going to find out information about that? I would probably start with an informal reading inventory of some sort, and you must have an inventory that analyzes the idea units of a retelling, simply saying this is satisfactory or unsatisfactory does not cut it. You must analyze the idea units that that child is telling you in both narrative and informational text. What parts are they noticing? What parts are they telling you spontaneously? What parts that can they tell you with prompting? So these are two assessments that you would want to employ, all right? Then if you're concerned about your child's language, you might employ get with your school language teacher, and that specialized teacher in Tier 3, I would hope, would have the resources to administer the Peabody picture vocabulary test and the expressive language test to get some greater details about the kind of language problems that the child is encountering. And then finally, what about reading strategies? In our McKenna and Stahl book, the assessment book, we have several tests. We have a textbook interview that you can administer to a child to figure out what strategies do they employ when they're reading narratives, what do they do when they're reading informational text. What about what cognitive strategies are they using when they're reading? How do they view themselves as a reader? What do they see as the purpose of reading different kinds of text? And what do they do when they get to a hard bit? Then strategies for reading. An informal reading inventory, again, analyzing the idea units, and also explicit questions and implicit questions that have been tested and that are standardized. We don't want this to be done in a haphazard way. I would recommend for Tier 3 students, an informal reading inventory that works well and meets this criteria is the qualitative reading inventory. Meets this criteria. And then an index, again, that index of reading awareness provides you with cues about what kinds of in-head strategies, and also think alouds. Again, the QRI, which is an informal reading inventory, has some passages that are broken up, and you can actually use think aloud as an assessment tool. Progress monitoring in the intermediate grades. I think for progress monitoring in these intermediate grades, I do think that the oral reading, a measure of oral reading fluency, a CBM like your Dibbles, like your Ames Web, or any 1 minute measure of standardized passage, of a grade level passage, is going to be one of your best ways to identify and to do progress monitoring, because it's going to be very sensitive to growth. Now, the comprehension pathways, there's not a silver bullet here. Some people, not me, some people like the CBM days. I have not had success with it, all right? I have not had success in it being sensitive to growth over time. I do believe in using idea units. I do believe in a standardized scoring of story grammar elements in a retelling, and also writing in response to text. And when kids are in third, fourth, and fifth grade, I think their writing in response to text is an important measure of comprehension, and that's a way that you can measure both number of words and the increase in the number of words and their increase in quality using the New York State ELA rubric that they will be judged on during the test in April. In order to work a model like this, PD is needed for those, for people who are interventionists. I was actually at a school, I didn't make this up, and a teacher, when I was asking, just like I did at the beginning of this presentation, what role do you all play at your school, a teacher, and it was November, and a teacher actually said, I'm the RTI teacher, whatever that means. That's frightening. So as a school, though, we must be responsible. Is your RTI framework an evolving, organizing infrastructure that's helping you to meet the needs of the Common Core? If not, your school team needs to figure out what needs to happen to enable your school to give the children the differentiated, specialized instruction that is needed. And we can't, I'm embarrassed to admit it, but that you really can't count on your schools of education, or you can't really count on somebody being professionally responsible and going out and learning this stuff on their own. So what is it that you can provide as a school? And I think because you only have a handful of people serving in these roles, I don't think schools can do this alone. I think school principals have to get together with other school principals and collaborate either at the BOCES level, or get a cluster of three or four schools together and have their intervention specialists learn many of these diagnostic techniques so that you're better prepared to actually hit an instructional target. So we're ready now for questions, and I'll slide over so I can actually see your questions. But I want to thank you for the effort that you have made to be with me during this 4 weeks, and your patience in helping me learn how to do these webinars. It really has been wonderful to be with you during these 4 or 5 weeks. And please feel free to contact me personally. I am available to support you. I'm available to support your school. And I hope that I'll actually see you face to face, and please introduce yourself to me if we're at the International Reading Association conference together in May. Please seek me out so that we can chat and meet face to face. So I'm going to slide my screen over so I can see your questions now. Please, let's ask some questions. I know that was a lot of information. Rebecca, I see your question. What you do for an RTI student that suffers from language processing but scores well on a maze means that they need those the Peabody and some other, go to your language teacher, and they need language development. You know, what are the kinds of, you need to figure out through diagnostic assessments that your language teacher will know about of where is that language process falling apart. Because I agree, you know, it does not do any good to put that child who is already scoring well on maze or who is doing well on a, you know, some other kind of CBM, it doesn't do, or some other kind of assessment, to put them in a tier two or tier three intervention or even a special ed setting that's not teaching them what the target is for their own personal learning. So you'll need some kinds of specialized diagnostic tools that I think that your language, your speech language teacher will be in a position to provide for you. Oh, no, no, no. Someone is asking me if I see Ellie by Fountain Pinnell as a Tier 3 resource. I'm going to scoot back. Tammy, I look forward to seeing you. Please come introduce yourself to me. But, yes, I am familiar with Ellie. And here is what seems to happen in those settings. When you use that as a Tier 3 resource, typically, children who may need more support in foundational skills or are not receiving the intensity of support in skills of those foundational skills with Ellie, they tend to be getting a duplication of the guided reading that is being conducted in their Tier 1 setting. So, because the reality is, Ellie, even though it is a fake takeoff on reading recovery, what is missing is the intensity and the kind of daily progress monitoring that reading recovery provides. And so, therefore, I do not see Ellie personally, and this is just my personal opinion, I do not see it as intense enough for a Tier 3 setting. And I also see that it tends to ignore an explicit systematic instruction in a very intense way of phonics and high-frequency words that is needed by most kids that are in Tier 2 and Tier 3 in kindergarten and first grade. Oh, please, Janine, this is a question about the reading recovery program. Please contact, if you'll go to, if you'll Google Reading Recovery NYU, Paula Bennett is the project manager of the Reading Recovery Program for all of New York City and Pennsylvania and many, and three other states. And she can tell you more information about how you might get reading recovery program at your school if you are interested, because it truly is the gold standard. Let's see, some other questions. I'm scooting down. Thank you for all your beautiful comments. I really look forward to meeting you. No, I think, Jolene, as you asked, I do not recommend reading programs for Tier 3. To me, you need to have an expert, a reading expert, because these children who end up in Tier 3 and special ed are children who have not been successful in programs. And so because their needs are so diverse, an expert teacher needs to be able to provide a diagnostic, individualized program for them. There is not a standardized program that can meet children's needs in Tier 3 or special education, in my opinion. I would say that the best advice would be to send your reading intervention specialist and your special ed teacher to get some really intense, good diagnostic training, because that way they'll be able to provide exactly the instruction that those children need and raise their scores in those ways through providing diagnostic instruction that actually hits each child's target. Is a full ELA pullout 120 co-taught by? I don't know of any research on that kind of model, but I don't think a full ELA pullout 120 minutes. I'm not really sure of any of the regulations on that kind of a model. And I don't have the research, so I would not be able to stake a claim on whether that kind of model is effective, because I would not have the research available, nor am I aware of whether that's acceptable in terms of regulations. Where does LLI by FNP fit? I guess it would fit in Tier 2 if that is what the assessments, if your assessments say that your child is having difficulty reading increasingly difficult text, then it would fit in Tier 2. But I would hate to see that duplicate exactly what is happening in Tier 1 if they're using similar procedures to Ellie in Tier 1 and that is not being effective. So it would have to be decided where it fits according to your own decision tree that your school has made, and also whether it is being effective in helping children reach the goals that you have established for them. And Denise, same thing in terms of your question. What is a reasonable time frame to expect results in a targeted skill during Tier 2? Well, it depends on what the skill is. I mean, I think if it's a skill like a phonics skill, then that should happen, and you're looking at those foundational skills, that should happen with some very explicit instruction, and it's, and you know that this kid needs to learn the short A vowel sounds, and you are every week teaching some, a couple different patterns in an explicit way, targeted to where that child is developmentally, and they are not learning them, and you're doing some good explicit instruction, and you're getting them to hear the sounds, and you've backed up because you know they can hear the sound, and then you're getting them to read the sounds, and you're getting them to spell the sound patterns, and that you are doing all those things multiple ways, and you're doing them multimodally, and the child is still not getting those sounds, well then, in conjunction, and that's holding them back with the reading process, well then at that point, after one round of instruction, if you're doing that level of intensity, then you might say, well, this child, here's what we've done, and they are needing something even more intense. So, but it depends on exactly what's happening within each tier before. I can't generalize, oh, you need one round of instruction for this and two rounds for this, because it depends on an individual school ecology basis. It depends on the skill level of the teacher, and it depends on the narrowness of the targeted intervention and the rate of progress, as well as how far the child is off from the achievement goal as well. Well, I'm sorry that I can't help you with math because my expertise is purely literacy. So I'm very sorry that I'm not really aware of math programs. That's not really my area of expertise. Tier three should be at least 45 minutes. Now, in first grade and kindergarten, I still think in first grade and kindergarten, tier three can be 30 minutes because of the children's attention span. And you can get some really good work done as long as the pace of instruction is good. I mean, my 30-minute pace is a lot different than what I see in a lot of schools. I tell my reading clinic tutors they must be doing 8 to 10 activities within 30 minutes for a kindergarten and first grader. So, and that's, you know, and so I would think that within 30 minutes they should be fitting in about 5 to 6 activities, you know, familiar rereading, reading a brand new text, reading a familiar text, explicit word study instruction, high frequency word instruction, those things need to have a very fast pace. So in K-1, 30 minutes for tier three. However, in grades two and above, you absolutely need 45 minutes. And tier three is different than tier two. If you have decided that a child needs tier three, then tier two is not enough for them. So it's not on top of tier two, it's in place of tier two. I'm not familiar with Beverly Tyner's small group reading instruction. Reading recovery is a one-on-one intervention. Reading recovery is a one-on-one intervention in which teachers have to undergo a full year of intense training, teach behind the glass, and also continue meeting at least 8 times a year as continuing contact. So I'm not sure if what Beverly Tyner is describing is a fake reading recovery or not. Okay, so I think they're telling me. Thank you, Teresa. I look forward to seeing you in Buffalo. Is that your way of saying? I think our time is up. Please be sure to fill out the evaluation, and I think we were supposed to finish at 5:15.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stahl. We appreciate you being with us, and we hope everybody has a wonderful night.
Thank you, everyone.